most of my songs, I always try to write them that they will make people feel better. But I thought one day when I was real depressed that, you know how when you're real depressed and you see everything comes to nothing, well, I thought maybe I better take a different approach and write a song instead of directed at people that would somehow musically induce God into giving us all a break. Because I was getting a little fed up by this point. Since that time, I've decided that I shouldn't get any more breaks because I already squandered them in weird places. But I'd like to sing this song for you and hope that you'll get a break.
I was in a dingy corner of a record shop when I first spotted her. An unfamiliar long-haired woman staring directly out from her album cover. One of the shop staff had attached a note. For fans of musicians of the early 70s, like Laura Nyro, Joni Mitchell and Carole King.
I'll chase them to the bottom till I finally call them dreams fall deep.
The unabashed intensity of Judy Sill's voice was overwhelming.
Songs from so deep while I'm sleeping.
I devoured the liner notes in order to find out more. I was amazed that a search online turned up very little. Then I found a paragraph written by Andy Partridge, the singer and songwriter from the band XTC, tucked away in an old issue of Uncut magazine.
These songs to me were like little tiny symphonies, beautiful chord changes I'd never heard anyone use, so gentle and shifting. I just loved everything about what I heard. I loved the way that she swelled her vocal. And I thought, oh, you know, when I learn to sing, I'm going to do that too.
My frustration with Judy Sill is that people look at me blankly when I mention her, and just reading what you said about her, I just thought you're someone as well who heard her and was so touched by her.
Well, I heard them first in the early 70s. It was a girlfriend, actually, who, as soon as she went to work, I would surreptitiously creep over and put on these girly albums, which, you know, a chap who was into sort of the Stooges and the New York Dolls and all things noisy. I wasn't supposed to be listening to this stuff. And I was in complete heaven. And I thought, am I going crazy here? Because everyone says, oh, yeah, girl with guitar, it has to be, you know, Judy Collins, or it has to be. But then I'd say, oh, no, my favourite's Judy Sill. And people would look blankly at me. And then I'd feel really stupid because my guilty passion, nobody could even empathise and say, oh, yeah, Judy Sill, I love her too.
Well, I thought I'd do this song, Ladio, which is the first song I ever had in the radio. And the Turtles did it. And I have to remember to talk slow because I know my accent is real thick. Is it hard to understand me? No? Okay, good. They took out an ad in all the trade papers that said, Ladio, ladio, out of the radio, into your hearts. And it sold anyway.
While you sit and seek a crescent moon is laying at your feet, we'll hope that's made of sand. You don't think you can, but you have held it all in your hand, Ladio.
How did you find out more about her?
Well, just little sort of snatches, bits and pieces. I stumbled on a website about a year ago that it was kind of really distressing to read some of that history. And, you know, if it was a Hollywood movie, you'd say, oh, that's fake. I don't believe that.
That someone could have so many ordeals.
So many ordeals, so many unusual things happen, so many weird things happen. Like, I can't think of any, no matter how punk they say they are, how many people have robbed half a dozen liquor stores at gunpoint and then taken all the money back and rolled in it. You know, it's not the sort of thing that you tend to do. You know, I don't think even Iggy's done that one. But if you research her life, it's very tragic and very interesting and just totally unbelievable.
She ran away from home as a teenager, developed a heroin addiction, she fell in with a bandit and was sent to reform school to pay for her sins. It's hard not to read her story as if she's the heroine of a tragic folk ballad.
So many people are portraying her as this drug addict and prostitute and liquor store robber or whatever. That's not who she was. She was a kind person who had a huge talent and a lot to say. I know maybe she didn't make some very good decisions in her life, you know, perhaps those are all true. But to me, she was my aunt, and I loved her, and I loved her music.
This is the voice of Donna Disparti, Judy's niece. When Donna was young, she lived with Grandma O, Judy's mother, in her house in Hollywood.
When my grandfather, my biological grandfather, was alive, he was a cameraman for Hollywood Paramount Pictures. And my grandmother was actually an animator and was part of the animation team of Betty Boop. And so then my grandfather died when she was, I believe, 9. And then my grandmother married Ken Muse. And I think that's, you know, about the time that she started getting into most of her trouble. Because, you know, again, she didn't like Ken Muse for whatever reason. I've heard stories, but I don't know them for fact. But I know I was never allowed to be alone with him. And then, you know, again, then she I think when she turned about 15, she ran away and just started doing naughty things.
So I thought I'd do this oldest one first. This is about 3 years old and has all of my gospel licks that I learned when I was the church organist in reform school. That's the truth, I swear. It's the only fun I had there, you know.
What fascinates me the more I hear is the scale of her musical ambition. The range of styles threaded through her work. Rhythm and blues, Aaron Copland, Bach. From soaring hymnals to intricate folk songs that hit you straight in the heart. Her inventiveness still feels fresh. Perhaps she coined the best term for her bizarre musical hybrid, country cult baroque. This psychedelic gospel song, Enchanted Sky Machines, tells the story of flying saucers rescuing the gentle before the rapture comes.
If I told you some secrets, would you say I'm unreal? I could easily love you if you just let me feel. I can't play forever the games I've outgrown, but just your enchanted sky machines take all the gentle home.
My name is Jim Pons. I was a member of a rock and roll band in the 60s called The Turtles, and I had a band prior to that called The Leaves, and it was during those early days that I met Judy Sill. It's 1964, and we were beginning to engage in some drug use, and our saxophone player knew a guy who played in a jazz club in Hollywood, and he invited him to my house one day, and he sold us some marijuana. He showed up with a young girl he told us was his girlfriend and introduced her as Judy Sill. The next time he came, he brought her, and we got to know each other a little bit, and it turned out she had written a song, and she wanted me to hear her because both of them were heroin addicts at the time. She had been a prostitute, streetwalker, so that to, you know, pay for their heroin. And she wanted to write songs instead and get off the street. And she had one, and she wanted me to hear it. You know, I thought it was an extraordinary song. And I encouraged her to write some more songs. And on subsequent trips back to my house, she would come and play me a new song that was even better than the last one.
Here I was, just writing songs, and real poor. I had no one interested in my songs yet or anything. I knew this one guy that was in the Turtles, and one day he called me on the phone and said, "Hey, how'd you like us to do one of your songs? We'll give you a lot of money, and you'll be a writer for our company." And I said, "Great, you know." And I was living in a 55 Cadillac with five people at the time, sleeping in shifts in the flatlands of Hollywood. And it was in the summer. It wasn't so bad. It had air conditioning in the car. So it was really a thrill for me, as you can imagine. And so I just listened to the radio all the time with the earplug in my ear, day and night.
I've been looking for someone who sells truth by the pound. Then I saw the dealer and his friend arrive, but their gifts looked grim. Now I'm tired of hanging on, waiting for a showdown. Don't you see, I gotta ride him out, cause the pearl just around the bend.
At the time, the Turtles were about to close down ourselves, and we wanted to record her. We got her a record contract with David Geffen, I guess, Asylum Records, right? That was his first release, and we recorded the album. It was all the first songs that she wrote.
David Geffen signed Judy in 1971 and would release two of her albums alongside those of label mates The Eagles, Jackson Browne, Linda Ronstadt, Joni Mitchell, and a handsome, bearded songwriter, J.D. Souther.
I think Judy and I knew of each other before we knew each other, and David Geffen said, "You should meet this girl. She's as wacky as you are. You guys will get on great." And I'd like to know what you think of her songs anyway. So I went to some little place on Melrose. She was on stage with an upright piano and a gut-string guitar with about six people in the audience. And two of them looked like they just walked in, like they were tourists, and thought, "Oh, someone's playing in here." She played a few songs, and then one of these tourists that had wandered in, I asked her to play a Judy Collins song. And, which it wasn't. It was a Joni Mitchell song, but they wanted to hear Both Sides Now, which they called that Judy Collins song. And I believe Judy responded with a short string of expletives, which she probably can't use. And I just fell in love with her immediately. She said, "I'm up here playing my own songs. You want to hear that song? You go somewhere else and ask her to play it, you know?"
After I first bought her record, I spent hours searching for films of her live performances. I'd love to see this side to Judy, the uncomfortable honesty of her stage patter. One of the few things I found was a session on the old Grey Whistle Test. In 1973, she'd come to the UK to promote her second album, Heart Food. Hunched over a piano, half hidden by her hair, lost in her own world, she delicately picks out a perfect, effortless performance of her song, The Kiss. Presenter Whisperin' Bob Harris still has vivid memories of her performance.
I think you'd have to say the atmosphere was somewhat unpredictable. Just on the basis of her coming into Whistle Test, even the introduction, "Will you please buy my album so I don't have to keep supporting these snotty rock bands," or words that effect. I mean, there was no sort of sense of PR about any of this. There was no sense that she was trying to varnish over what she was really like. Women were still kind of half expected to be fluffy and feminine and not combative. She just broke the mold of all of that.
She had this magnetism that would pull people in. But once she sang, I think that was the part that you could really get down into the depths of Judy, you know, where her heart was. And I think people that were open to it really responded.
Crayon angel songs are slightly out of tune, but I'm sure I'm not to blame. Nothing's happened, but I think it will soon. So I sit here waiting for God in a train to the astral plane.
My name's Tommy Pelletier, and we had an affair for a brief time, but I don't know, we were close friends for the next 11 years. Well, she was my best friend, actually. She never talked about her past, you know, it was all about the future. And when I met her, she was unknown, and just writing these incredible songs. And she would go back and do these folk songs and these mountain songs, you know, from Tennessee.
That sort of dry Western sound of her voice, very uninflected, no vibrato. She loved the Sons of the Pioneers. And she loved all those kind of happy trails, kind of really Hollywood movie cowboy music. And somehow it all got into this bizarre literary interest in rebirth and just all these strange Jungian archetypes and then this mystical Christ legend. And
she was really a reader, and she read, you know, the Bible, the Bhagavad Gita. She was into anything she could get her hands on, trying to understand where we are, where we're going, where we came from. She did use a lot of religious context, and it was double meanings, though, in a lot of things, like Jesus was a crossmaker, but she was actually talking about one of her ex-boyfriends.
One time I trusted a stranger because I heard his sweet song, and it was gently enticing me, though there was something wrong. When I turned, he was gone. Blinding me, his song remains, reminding me he's a bandit and a heartbreaker. Oh, Jesus was a crossmaker.
Can we talk about Jesus was a crossmaker?
Yeah, if you want, sure.
It's about you, right?
It is, yes.
What was your reaction the first time you heard it?
Well, it was a little numbing. She came over to my house at about 7 or 8 in the morning and woke me up, pounded on the door, woke me up, and came in and sat on my bed and said, "This is for you." Very sourly. In fact, I think she called me something afterwards, and she played it for me. And it was obviously kind of a stunning thing to be face-to-face with.
I love that she prefaced it with, "This is for you."
Oh, yeah. She came in and said, "Hey, I just wrote this for you." And it was kind of half good-natured, but it was hard to tell. She had a kind of an impassive face. She had a face that it was deliberately difficult to read.
And so did she just leave that with you?
No, I actually think we went somewhere and got our pictures taken. She had found there was some guy on Hollywood Boulevard with a van with basically a dark room in the back. He would take your picture and make a poster of it.
Okay, that sounds bizarre. So you guys got a picture taken and turned it into a poster?
Yeah, Judy said, "Hey, this guy's making taking pictures and turning them into posters down the street. Let's go get one." I'm already kind of reeling from this song. I said, "Can you at least make me some coffee first?"
Jesus was a crossmaker, sweet silver angels over the sea.
We had quite a dramatic affair. I mean, I loved her. And she loved me, and it was a complicated bit of business. But well, we stayed friends for a few years after that. And then she took up with another guy, and he was very proprietary about her. But he sort of kept her away from all of her old friends, and in particular me, it seemed. And I didn't see a lot of her, but I think that music is some of the most important American songwriting, and she was extraordinary. And most of the rest of us, I thought, were still just sort of hacking at it.
She was a visionary with great musical talent and ability that was undermined by her demons and eventually eradicated her.
She struggled so hard and she believed so much in herself. And she just didn't get that big break. And I think that she had an attitude about her.
It was odd. Somebody with such talent that couldn't get over herself, even though she had a vision for herself as a homo superior. That's a word she used to use. The first inclination of the next part of the evolution of the human race.
You know, she upset David Geffen, and I think that was her downfall.
She felt like David wasn't giving her the right promotion. She got a little bit uptight. She would complain about that. She would say anything that's on her mind. And unfortunately, she said this in an audience at one of her concerts over in England. about kind of put David down. She called him, she mentioned that he was gay. And at that time, that was a very, you never talked about anything like that. And he got the word and he fired her.
There are a number of conflicting theories about this outburst against Geffen. Was he an unrequited love who spurned her advances? Or had there been a growing bitterness and frustration about how she was being marketed, feeling overlooked in favour of his other bands? Her petulant outing of him on stage clearly came out of a huge frustration. And from someone who was openly bisexual herself, perhaps there was also a discomfort with him being closeted.
I think probably whatever went down between them was just some her taking out her frustration about the first album not selling. Because we all knew that it was by far the best thing any of us had done.
Why didn't it sell?
Well, you've heard it. It's peculiar. It would be peculiar if it came out today. It would be peculiar if it came out in the 40s.
People just didn't get it, you know. It was a lot of different things that kind of brought her to this outburst that, you know, she kind of ruined her career at that time.
Now, here's a song that I wrote a real long time ago, and then as I was thinking about it, I thought this could really go for any time in my life because it's kind of one of those songs that confesses that I never do quite get it right, you know what I mean? The name is The Phoenix, and you know the phoenix is a mythical bird that is consumed by its own flames and then rises out of its own ashes, you know? The sun was red and the fires were roaring. Stars aligned and the webs were spun. I could have sworn I heard my spirit soaring. Guess I'm always chasing the sun, hoping we will soon be one. Until it turns around to me, then I try to run.
I wish it had turned out better for her. I know when it started going really downhill because she was in a car wreck in one of my cars. I loaned her a car when I was on the road, and she got T-boned.
There was another time she also fell. I think there was another car accident, and she fell and re-injured her back. And
it sort of set her back onto pain pills again, and I think that led to bigger and bigger things.
She was in constant pain. She had to wear little belts with little vibrators. I think now they embed them into your body, but she had little battery packs because of the pain.
That's really sad. I didn't know that. But I know that she was in a lot of pain. She had to go into the hospital a few different times, and, you know, they quit giving her painkillers because of her addictions.
Tuesday, right before Thanksgiving, that was the last time I saw her. We went out and just had a ball. We had a little game to see how many, phone numbers we could get. And so on our way home, you know, of course, you know, she had a half a dozen or more. I had one, but we laughed about it, and everything was great until I got that call.
The call that she passed, and it was pretty hard.
I was in New York, far away from what she and I had experienced. It was like a vague dream. Somebody told me that she had died. I thought they told me that she had taken her own life. I don't know if there's any merit to that or whether it was understood that she did or not, but that's what I thought I heard.
Yeah, I don't believe that she committed suicide. I think it was a terrible accident. Terrible accident. They found her with a needle in her arm. There was no note. She'd been by herself for a few days. She still did cocaine, and I believe that's how she passed away, was she had a cocaine overdose. And that's the other thing, when I went to the memorial service, one of her friends came up to me and he said, I do not believe, and I don't want you to believe, that she committed suicide, because she wouldn't do that. And he said, and I know this because she was starting to straighten up her life. You know, she wrote that new album and she was really doing much better. But that's on her death certificate, it says suicide.
Judy Sill died in 1979, Those last seemingly lost recordings of her final album weren't recovered until almost a quarter of a century later, lovingly reconstructed and re-released by Sonic Youth's producer Jim O'Rourke. It's been 10 years since I first heard her, and despite people's blank faces when I mention her name, I do feel like she's slowly, quietly, being rediscovered.
Her music was very influential for me, especially when I allowed myself to be myself later on. And she just put a template out for me that I spent years trying to get somewhere near. The Kiss is, I would have to say, is possibly the most beautiful song ever written. And I knew you were coming up here today, so yesterday I dug out all my Judy Sill and started playing it. And when I got to the Kiss, I had to turn it off.
Love rising from the mist.
That beautiful tracked voice with the swelling. Okay, I'm going a bit now. Oh, the climbing piano there, the notes climbing up under her voice. Sorry, I can't do it. Just too beautiful. It's perfect.
And still I hear their whisper.